Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. My name is Tandy, and I'm playing host today, giving Lisa a well-deserved rest of her voice there, although I'm sure we'll be doing a bit of talking.
I'll still chime in.
All three of us. Good, good. I'm joined today by Lisa and Christina, and we're talking about another one of these kind of beer-adjacent topics. Although we are talking about beer still, and we're talking about beer cocktails. So beer cocktails, hybrids, crossovers. What are these things, and why on earth would you add anything else to your beer? I'd like to know. I'd like to be convinced, because I know nothing about it. So before we get going with what are we drinking, I'm just going to remind you all there that we love it. We love it when you all share our episodes with your friends, when you leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We also love it when you guys buy merch or buy us a beer, and you can find all the links to that as well as our socials in any one of our bios on social media. So on Twitter, we are at Beer Ladies Pod, and on Instagram, we're Beer Ladies Pod. On Facebook, we're Beer Ladies Podcast, but you'll find us, search for us. And a slightly improved website coming your way soon enough. So that'll also be a thing. All right, ladies, let's talk beer cocktails. And let's maybe just go around the houses and see what we're all drinking, whether cocktail-y or not. Christina, let's start with you.
So I have, actually, Lisa gave this to me, and I've been holding on to it. So this is the Crack Beer Community, which, shout out, they have a new podcast as well. So I'm really excited for them and listening to them, and it's amazing. So well done. So the Crack Beer Community, in collaboration with Dot Brew, also love Dot Brew. And it's a barrel-aged Imperial West Coast Pale Ale. Speaking of, like, you know, fancy kind of elaborate beers. So it was aged in 8 months in a bourbon barrel. So that's really exciting. So that's what I have today.
Interesting. Before you move on, what is the ABV of that beer?
To say it was like cocktail adjacent.
Yeah, it's 11.2%. So that'll...
That sounds like Imperial IPA territory, not Imperial Pale Ale territory. Well, you all can go back and listen to our IPA episode for some of that and other controversies. But that sounds delicious and very interesting. Lisa, what have you got?
So I'm not quite sure what to call this. And as I was thinking, as we were sort of throwing it together with what we had around the house, we were experimenting, but also trying to look at a couple of beer recipes, both online and or beer cocktail, rather, recipes that we had at home and some books as well as online. We kind of went with what we had. So it's kind of like a dark and stormy-ish, but made with Guinness. So it's basically got a Guinness base, and then we've played around with some rum, some Demerara's Rich Simple, some allspice dram. There's a bit of lime in there. So maybe we'll ask listeners what this kind of thing should actually be called. I'm sure some of you are doing creative things at home with the your extra cans of Guinness. So again, just to give it a shot. So this is purely experimental, but certainly kind of tropical adjacent. I'll say that.
Like it. Lisa's beer cocktail of the evening. Well, we'll have to find a better name for that for sure. Sounds really cool. And I will admit, guys, I've never mixed my beer with anything except for lemonade to make a shandy. And today is no different. I'm just drinking a straight up beer because I needed some convincing on this cocktail vibe. So I'm drinking a Tiny by Larkins. So Larkins have done some work on their branding recently. I think it's kind of funky and kind of cool, very colorful. This is a session IPA. It's 4%. And yeah, I mean, so far, look, it's a nice hazy boy, and it's very tropical. I'm enjoying it so far. There it is. Okay, so if I were to mix this, what would it be mixed with? No idea. Tell us about beer cocktails, friends. Christina, are these are beer cocktails or things that we might mix with beer? Is this a new concept?
No. No, people have been mixing beer with other things to make new kinds of beers and ales for a very, very long time. I mean, of course, they probably wouldn't have called it cocktails because that's a more modern term, but they would have been mixing things to make other delicious drinks for a very, very, very long time. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's actually what I've been working on. My sort of cooking historical beer cooking project on my website at the minute, or did last year, and I'm going to start picking it up again because I miss doing it. It's a lot of fun, but yeah, no, they're very old.
So I remember when we did malt tonics, both episodes 1 and 2, we did speak about the idea of mixing ale or beer with medicinal kind of things to give us a medicinal quality. Surely, it's not just that though, right? I mean, for a shandy, for instance, you're mixing it with lemonade to, I think, lower the ABV, but also to make it really easy to drink in a hot summer day, which is why I would know about that one a bit more. But why else would we mix beer with other things? Is it just a purely creative process where we want nice, tasty things?
Well, yeah, but there's also certain ones that are good for certain times of year. So I am going to do the thing I hate. I'm going to talk about Christmas, and it isn't Halloween yet, but here we are. So one of the famous sort of, or most famous drinks that you've probably heard of is lamb's wool, or you might be familiar with wassailing and that kind of tradition around Christmas, which is also known as apple howling, which someone really needs to make a metal band called apple howling, because I just like obsessed with that name. And so this lamb's wool would have been a drink that you would have for wassailing. And let's
pretend that everybody else listening is like me and doesn't understand any of these traditions. Can you give us the TLDR?
Yeah, so TLDR, there's lots of different websites to talk about this. So I can link some. So it's associated with the 12th night, which is the January 5th, and it marks the eve of the Epiphany for people who follow Christianity. And so wassailing is really context specific. So it really depends on where you lived. But it's definitely something that happened in the UK, Wales, England, and different parts of the UK had different traditions. Wales had their own traditions, and different parts of like England had different traditions. And a lot of them involved traveling to orchards, singing songs, drinking beverages involving apples. And as I said, some of the versions of the tradition are called apple howling, which is, again, just my favorite freaking name.
It's
of
a good anything. Word. Yeah.
It's so fun to call it. Lamb's wool, which is a drink that's associated with wassailing, not the only drink, but a version of, and there's many different versions of lamb's wool, I should say. But this tends to involve ale with sugar, nutmeg, ginger, and apples. And so there's all different recipes, and I made two different ones because science, I don't know, just felt like making two. So one of them added eggs and cream, and the other one was without cream. So yeah, so I made both. And so basically I peel and roast your apples. I used Granny Smith apples because they were a little less sweet. I roasted them. You can add spices and sugars if you want. I didn't. Then I brought some ale to just below boiling. You don't want to get it too hot because you'll get rid of that sweet, sweet alcohol, though apparently you don't lose as much alcohol as you think you do.
Uh-huh.
New studies I think I've read. So then you mix in nutmeg, ginger, cloves, and sugar. And so it really depends on how sweet or whatever you want it to be. And I added brown sugar. And then if you want to add the cream, you add eggs and cream. And then you stir it and heat it together. And then you add the apples and smash it up into the drink. And then you drink it. So I liked the one without the cream and eggs. I thought that the apples and the spice and the malt worked really well. I thought that the cream and egg version sort of overwhelmed the drink. Hmm. But I could see why people liked it. It was just a little too much for me. A little too rich, I think I want to say. I preferred the sort of lighter version. But yeah, so there's stuff like that. And then we'll talk about some other ones that are just fun that people like to drink.
Yeah, we actually tried to do a sort of experimental wassail yesterday, but we had what I have to describe, and I'm very sorry, people of the internet, a wassail fail. It was just too much of all the things, and it just was like too sweet and too spicy. And so beware, this can happen. Again, some people might like it, but we did try to sort of say, hey, we've got a couple old beers hanging around. Maybe these have gone off slightly. So I think to the why, you know, you might want to think, well, you don't want this to go to waste. Let's see if we can repurpose this. And we did try, but we were, I'm afraid, a bit heavy on some of the spice. And so a bit much. But again, a more careful hand might have really gotten something out of it.
See, now these just sound like variations of a mulled wine to me, mm-hmm. except obviously with a beer instead of a wine. Which sounds amazing, but what kind of beer or ale would you use in something like this? What's your best bet?
Well, at the time, it's kind of sort of whatever they had around. So depending on, so the Lambswool recipe I did was, I think, 16th or 17th century, something like that. So just to sort of whatever you'd have around. If you are recreating this today, as I do, I don't make 17th and 16th century ale every time I want to do one of these experiments. That would be way too time consuming. I tend to opt for malt forward, very malt forward beers if it's calling for ale in particular. With the mulled ones, I just like the taste better. So sometimes I use like a really nice German lager. I think they work really well, like a dark German lager. I think they're really, really good. An English mild is also a good choice. You know, just think about the malt profile. Even an English pale ale you could use, but I want it to taste good, the best that I can. So I'm leaning into that malt flavor because I know that I really want that nice malty backbone to go well with the spices. In theory, you could use whatever you want. But I'm just trying to think, okay, nutmeg, you know, cinnamon, ginger. I think a malt forward beer would taste really well. You could probably do a nice one with a stout or a barley wine as well. And I do recommend beers I'll link my website, but I recommend different beers for each of the recipes that I've used. But I tend to go for malty beers, malty lagers, malty ales.
Yeah, I've had some really successful ones, again, where I've bought them from someone, a professional who's made them for me, from like an old ale or, like you said, like a barley wine. So already kind of at that higher end ABV wise. But I think also gave you a little more to play with kind of complexity wise, where it wasn't necessarily then overpowered by some of the things that were put in. But again, historically, I think it's whatever was to hand. So
what you had.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be almost interested to see if you were going to make something cooked, especially what you would need to do to, say, a really hoppy beer to make it, I don't know, either more balanced, or would you lean in and make it more herbal or more tropical or more citrusy, depending on the hops that are in that beer? You know, what would you do per beer? You know, one of the experiments that I've done recently as part of my Works Beer Club was beer and food pairing. And what I learned through that process was, firstly, people who do this for a living are like magicians. But secondly, it actually made, or it would make more sense next time to taste this very specific beer that you're trying to pair rather than try and figure out a food and then a style of beer that you think is going to go with it, it's almost like start with that specific beer, then build flavors around that. And so I wonder with something like cocktails, whether you would do the same thing, you know, start with the beer that you have and then design a recipe that way.
It just sort of depends on what the recipe is. Like I know with all these sort of mulled ones that I know what I'm going to use because I've made a lot of them at this point. But if you were to be pulling something more hoppy, so I would definitely think, okay, if I'm using English, you know, English hops, if the beer has English hops, then I might look for a cocktail recipe that would play up those kinds of notes in a beer, because of course those are quite different than New World hops. So you might pick something that would play better with that, like a New World hopped beer might do better for a shandy, you know. So you can kind of think about it that way and what you want to pull out and what you don't want to do, because there's plenty of cocktails that don't involve heat, you know, there's porter cups and all kinds of things that are, you know, colder beverages as well. And I can link a book that talks about them as well. So there's a lots of different options of what you can kind of play around with, but yeah, no, I think it really just depends on like what drink you're making, but yeah, I definitely can see a lot of value in exactly what you're saying in planning your cocktails.
So how would we blend, or what kinds of cocktails might you get if you're looking at cold blends? Are there any cocktails that are quite famous or well known?
Porter cup.
Explain what that one is.
I'll at least explain this one.
Oh, porter cup I know less about. I'll have to pass on that one, but I can start in with the michelada, which is what you're going to get at all of your good Mexican restaurants. And shout out to El Grito here, just up the road in Dublin. They do a bunch of varieties of chiladas, micheladas, all those kinds of things where, you know, you can start with basically the cheapest Mexican lager you have sitting around. Although actually I like it if you use some of the darker ones. I think it adds a little bit more. Again, I don't think complexity is the right word because that's not what you're going for, but I think it just adds, like, again, kind of an interesting note if you're having, you know, chips or something else very salty. But you've got, you know, you've got the lime, you've got, you know, basically what's almost always a lager, you've got the salt, but then you also put in some hot sauce. Now, this can go in a direction if you start going overboard, but when you do it just right, and again, just right, it's not hard. Like, you're really just putting these very simple ingredients together. It's really, really nice on a hot day, and it just adds a little bit of a kick, but just really, really refreshing. And again, it means that you can hang out at your Mexican restaurant longer because you're not just, you know, sitting there getting absolutely bombed throughout the day. So you can really kind of extend the enjoyment. So highly recommend those, especially on a hot day. It's really, really nice. And there are other kind of slightly more complex variations of those too. But to me, that's like your ultimate simple go-to hot weather, basically fun beer cocktail where it's super simple, doesn't have to be expensive. It's just, it just goes with things. It's lovely.
And yeah, I love those. And I'll a porter cup. So the one I'm talking about is from the 1929 Bon Vivant's Companion or How to Mix Drinks by Jerry Thomas,
lovely.
Which is available for free on the interwebs. So I highly recommend that you do this. And actually this is meant to be my next historical beer project. So I will make this and report back. But the porter cup in this is, it says to mix a tankard or covered jug, a bottle of porter, and an equal quantity of table ale. Then add some brandy, ginger syrup, 3 to 4 lumps of sugar, some nutmeg, and then chill it for a half an hour. And then before you serve it, you add a teaspoon of soda or carbonate of soda, and then you add some cucumber for garnish.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. Okay, so porter being a dark beer, sort of malt forward. Table ale, are we talking about something a bit lighter, something obviously less, like what kind of ABV again are we talking? Or is this just, this? I mean, table ales or table beers are meant to be quite thin in a way, 2-3%, right?
I would imagine it's a lower ABV beer, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ale.
So, yeah.
But yeah.
The cucumber really throws me off. The bicarb, I wonder why that would be added. Is it to liven up the carbonation again, I wonder?
We will find out. I have no idea. It's an interesting choice. I'm wondering. Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Because right before you send it. It says just before sending it to the table, stir in a teaspoon of carbonate of soda. So it's something that happens like right before you serve it, which is interesting. So I'm going to make this and I will report back.
That is interesting. Although speaking of porter, I will have to say I have this book that I was looking through, sort of Drinking with Dickens. So it is by Cedric Dickens, great grandson of Charles Dickens. Although again, one of many, many, many great grandsons of Charles Dickens. But he does have, you know, he basically has sort of different quotations from great grandpa's books, stories, etc. And then he kind of recreates some of the drinks that he would have, you know, been going out and about with. So he is very into, you know, he's all about the porter. And to him, he says, porter is Guinness. And I'm like, oh my dude, you can get into so many arguments with people and you'd probably all be right and wrong at the same time. And not going to go down that road, but he has one called the dog's nose, which is 1 pint porter. And then parentheses Guinness, like, okay, fine. And this book's from 1980. So this is not like he's seeking out, you know, ye ancient versions of things, but it's 1 pint of Guinness, 2 ounces of gin, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, pinch of nutmeg, but again, it's with warm Guinness. And I just don't think it'll be for me, but I can see how maybe, you know, cold weather, this might be a thing. But he's got a lot of others kind of, you know, all kind of made with a, you know, a porter backbone, if you like. But then he's got something called a shandy gaff, where I was like, oh, it'll be kind of a shandy. And it's like, yes, but. And again, he's very non-specific because it starts with 1/2 pint of best ale, which could be anything. Yeah. 1/2 pint ginger beer. And you're like, okay, you know, we're in sort of familiar shandy territory.
Shandy territory here.
Yeah. Put in some ice, but then 1 liqueur glass of orange brandy. I'm like, oh, okay. We've gone in a different direction here with this.
That sounds nice.
And then 1/2 a lemon. So I don't know. I feel like to me, it might be.
I want to drink that.
I feel like for me, it would be too citrusy, but again, that's just personal taste. But I'm like, now, so would a best ale, are we talking like a bitter? Are we talking a pale ale? Again, lots of things you could try here, but you have to put it into your favorite tankard. So again, we've got a tankard, you know, see where it goes. And then he just goes right back to, porter, Guinness. I went to Galway once. And yeah, so it's, you know, it's a strange thing. And then he finishes up his beer cocktail chapter on a black velvet. And I think we've all seen people have a black velvet. You know, your Guinness and champagne. And I'm always like, not for me. Oh, I've seen a lot of young people have it. To me, that's one of those things people would have had when they were sort of 18, 19 and thought they were fancy. And never for me. But again, don't want to yuck someone else's yum. If someone else loves it, you do you.
We drank a lot of half cider, half Guinness.
I've seen half cider, half Guinness. And I've seen, you know, like, you know, your blackcurrant and Guinness, you know, all of those kind of things. But I don't know. I don't know. It is working, though, as a sort of, again, dark and stormy-ish base. But I can, to me, it does not work with a lot of other things. So personal taste, though.
Interesting. I can't believe that people would mix champagne and Guinness. That's crazy.
I have definitely seen it. I don't know if it's more of a sort of North American thing, because I've also seen it in Canada. But per Cedric Dickens, though, he's having it over in England. So bit of a mystery. But again, it's one of those things I associate with people who don't really like alcohol, drinking alcohol. And I also think it's one of those things I've seen people have at maybe a wedding and they're already kind of drunk. So, you know, but again, there may be someone who loves it and that's good for them.
I mean, like, I can definitely say that I've made something that I thought that this was going to be, I'm not going to like this. and it turns out it was like my favorite one, which was the cock ale.
Oh, cock ale. That's a journey.
Ooh, do
for
you
people.
Describe
it? Yeah. So a cock ale, well, it's called a cock ale because you boil a rooster in beer.
Sorry, what?
This is still all safe for work, everyone. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like, to address the elephant in the room, they were aware that the name is, you know, what it is. In a dictionary from 1811, cocktail is defined as a provocative drink. So they're aware that the name is a little whatever. It's a little tongue-in-cheek.
I'm more surprised by the fact that we're boiling a chicken.
There's a tradition of these things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're really old. So one of the recipes I found is from the 17th century, but it's, you know, it's old. Like it's a very old kind of. So basically you're supposed to take a rooster and you boil them in 8 gallons of ale. Now, when I made mine, I didn't have a rooster handy.
Yeah. No. Funny story.
So I just used some chicken. And yeah, and then you add raisins, nutmegs, mace, dates. And then you can add some sack, which is a certain kind of a white wine from Spain. So it's kind of like a dry sherry. I obviously didn't have best sack, so I just used some cream sherry. So I only made a little bit. And first I screwed it up because I added a stock pot, not realizing all of the frickin' salt in a stock pot. So that just completely destroyed the recipe. So I completely messed it up and then I had to try it again. So the second time I then used chicken and I used dark meat chicken. And I used a malt forward lager with very, very low hop bitterness. Yeah. And then I did the dates, the raisins, the whole thing. Oh my God. It was so good.
Seriously.
So good. Because what the chicken added, well, at least the dark meat, was just like a nice richness to it, but it wasn't like overwhelming or cloying. So it just added this like lovely richness to this like warm drink. With the warming spices, this sort of like mulled flavor, from the dates and the raisins, it was gorgeous. I can honestly see why it was really, really popular. I will say I was really, really reticent about the whole thing, but I really, really liked it. Like, honestly, probably my favorite of the ones I've made. That's insane.
That's insane to me. But now I feel like if you make it, I will try it, but I don't think I would try it myself. As in, I don't think I would make it.
Well, maybe I'll make some for like a Christmas party or something and bring some because in a big thing and everyone can try some because it's really good. It's really good, friends. Like it's nice. And the sherry is that's nice.
Well, and again, people will know probably the Robert Herrick poem, his Farewell to Sack, where he's listing things that he's going to miss as much as Sack now that he has to be on the wagon. Kind of, sort of. Although, Tandy, you're making a face that suggests you did not have to study this poem in high school and college. So maybe that's just like people like me. But it's a good poem. You should definitely like check it out. It's pretty good. But yeah, no, that would be interesting. And I think that actually fits too with the kind of the tradition of people having like, you know, a sort of a beer founded, you know, punch or those kind of sort of communal drinks that you would have had at sort of, you know, your sort of roadside taverns and things like that, where again, you have to think some of that is kind of, how do we get the most out of what we've got, you know, sitting around? And maybe some of our clientele's not too fussy, but maybe some of this is really good too. Like we might have the good stuff off in this room, but maybe this is kind of in the kind of communal room. So
it's interesting to me because having, let's say, a 4 or 5% beer, it feels to me like you wouldn't want to dilute that much further. So you wouldn't want to try and stretch it, you know, whereas a bottle of really strong spirits or, you know, some, you know, or even a beer of 11 or 12%, you might want to thin it out and, you know, make more of it, so to speak. Mm. So it's strange to me that you would use almost low ABV beer, unless you were just trying for something that was just different and it was a base, especially because maybe a lot of these would have been pre the eras of Coke and Pepsi and Sprite and, you know, all of the kind of mixes that we now mix with all of our spirits.
Well, and a lot of them call for adding sack or spirits of some kind. So they're adding the booze back into it. Like they're definitely, some of these are going for like really strong alcohol. Like even in the braggot that I made, they wanted you to add distilled spirits back to it. So like they're definitely adding, not always, but they're in some circumstances adding the like the higher levels of alcohol back to the drinks. Yeah. So like one, an example off the top of my head, I'm actually looking at it, not really the top of my head, but you know, is a specific Irish one. It's called Scoultine, which is an Irish hot whiskey and beer cocktail. Okay. So I don't know the origins of this, but I did see it in two instances from the 1800s. And it is described as whiskey and beer flavored with butter, eggs, and sugar and some spices. And one of the people described it as served screeching hot. But yes, it also has, you know, that whiskey in it. So
that sounds kind of nice.
Yeah.
It was nice.
All fine. Yeah.
It was nice. Yeah. Oh, and this one I made with an extra special bitter, the Lochgill Watt extra special bitter. That worked out really nice. And some Tullamore Dew whiskey. It was really good. It was very, very good. Highly recommend it. I made it in the middle of summer when it was like a million degrees out. Don't recommend that. But other than that, you know, and today it was kind of cold. So day like that today would be really nice.
I was going to say, now, with the energy crisis, I feel like this is the kind of thing we're going to be doing to keep warm.
Definitely.
Know? Oh, that's a good thought. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if any of you are like me, where it gets to this cold weather and I want mulled wine, right? But I just get my slow cooker out and then I've just got mulled wine and it just becomes almost a master stock of mulled wine. So I just, you know, keep topping it up and it just keeps going. And so maybe I'll try it this year with some beer.
Yeah, you could definitely do it. And actually, I'm trying to think of places too where I've had some really interesting kind of beer and especially beer whiskey cocktails. And the place that keeps coming to mind for me is Cask in Cork, where I don't know if you guys have been, but they make some really interesting cocktails. They're one of those places where they're all sort of crafted for the season, if you like. And they do some really interesting things, mixing local whiskey and local beer and then other delicious cocktail ingredients. So again, lots of places we should have, you know, field trips to, but that's one where they do exactly that kind of thing. Maybe they're partially inspired by some of those old, you know, 19th century recipes, but obviously putting a modern twist on them, having modern tastes in mind, because I've definitely had a cocktail there that was, I'm trying to remember what the beer was, but it was like a pale ale, one of the local whiskeys, and then some other delicious things all wrapped together. So, you know, your modern mixologists are doing very cool things in this area. But again, you can kind of hearken these things back too.
That's super cool. Do you know, it did unlock a memory for me. I was in Switzerland many years ago and in some weird club that was actually at the base of a prison, which was also a hotel. Anyway.
Sure.
They served these kind of, and I do think it was like a Mexican lager type of beer, but it had lime, hot sauce, but it also had tequila in it. And that was actually really cool.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that would be awesome, but wow, it was great. It's like a little margarita beer.
Yeah, I've seen a couple other things like that. Yeah, that all kind of fit in that. Where is it? Is it more of a beer cocktail? Is it more of a margarita? Mm. Bit of everything? But yeah, some of those can be really, really nice, especially, you know, like you say, if it's hot or if it's just like just the right food for it. So yeah, I think there's a lot of scope to play around with there. And I'm sure there's a ton that like we're not even thinking of that you could do with all kinds of like Asian ingredients and flavors. And again, I'm thinking of a bar we used to go to in Seattle called Navy Strength, where they pick a different sort of focus or a different region each quarter. And they have a completely new cocktail menu along with a couple sort of, you know, standard traditional ones. But I remember when they had kind of, I want to say Singapore was kind of the focus, and then it was all around that. There were some really interesting flavors, just fascinating things there. And it would be a mix of, you know, kind of purely, you know, liqueur and, you know, sort of fruit juice cocktails, but also a lot of beer cocktails. So I think there, you know, there are places like that who are kind of, you know, trying to be really thoughtful about what those influences are and trying to bring flavors that maybe people haven't thought of putting together, but they can be so good.
Sounds amazing. Sounds like you really could actually design a whole bunch of cocktails for different times of the year, different styles of beer, or different ingredients that you've got on hand mm-hmm. as well. You know, yeah. someone's just cooking in a different way.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think like a really good bartender, good mixologist, like they can do magic, kind of like you were saying before. And you know, sometimes those drinks will be on fire when you get them, or, you know, they'll have, you know, the sort of liquid nitrogen smoke or whatever. That's fun. I'm happy to have a gimmick, but yeah, it's like, what, you know, what can you do if you mix these things together, which kind of on their own are all lovely, but then, you know, combine them to something unexpected.
Yeah. So Christina, of the ones that you've made, besides the cocktail, what have been your highlights, and what are ones that maybe you wouldn't try again?
Let me see. I don't think I was like the biggest fan of the pasta that I made, which again has like milk and cream and eggs and all that stuff in it. And it's just, I'm just not as big of a fan of like the heavier drinks. I can see why people thought it was really, why they would think they were good. And there's like a million pasta recipes. So if you've tried one pasta recipe, you've tried one pasta recipe. There's like a million other ones to try. So I can't say I don't like pasta. I can just say that I wasn't a fan of the recipe that I particularly tried. I will keep trying them. I really did like the butter beer that I made. That was probably another one of my favorite ones.
Tell us more.
So the one that I made was from the Good Housewife's Handmade for the Kitchen, which was printed in 1594. And you take beer and eggs and sugar and nutmeg and cloves and ginger, and you heat it all up and you mix it up, and then you add butter to it, and then you mix them all together and you froth them all up. And it is delicious. It's so good. Honestly, I'd say the cocktail and the butter beer are like my top two beer drinks. I love both of them. They're so good. The butter beer is like nice and frothy, and I had it on like a really, really cold day last year, and I can just remember being so cold and drinking it and just being this like lovely warming drink. Yeah, gorgeous. Really, really, really nice.
It really does sound like a hug.
It was. It's very comforting. It's a really comforting drink.
Mm. I had some butterbeer at Harry Potter World, but that was not alcoholic. So, you know.
No. This is the actual historical recipe. And there's like, again, there's a million of versions of butterbeer. So, but it's, you know, the essence is the same, and it's really good.
Mm, and what kind of based beer did you start with? Sorry, Lisa.
Let me see. I used a malty German lager.
Cool. Ooh, lovely. Yeah, no, I was just going to say it's perfect for, you know, like we're saying, this cold weather that's coming, and maybe you don't want it to put the heat on just yet, but this might keep you going for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to break these recipes out again. Actually, I'm just going to have to, I have a million of these. I'm going to have to just start making more of them. I'll have to get this back up and running, but yeah.
Sounds divine. Do we have any other cocktails that we want to talk about? Any parting thoughts?
I think I'll just say it's funny that, you know, there are some beer specific cocktail books which are out there now. And I was looking at some of what I have, which are great, but I think it's surprising almost the extent to which you have a lot of early ones. And then there's the sort of gulf, like they don't appear in, like, I've got one of, you know, your Trader Vic's here. There's basically nothing in, you know, Trader Vic's bartender guide telling you about, you know, how to mix beer with anything. It's really all just, you know, what are your fruit juices you can mix with, you know, whiskey or gin or that kind of thing. And I wonder, like, how much of that is, you know, as we got sort of, if you like, sort of better and more distinct kinds of gin or vodka or rum, you know, that people were like, ooh, let's just play off these flavors versus, hey, we got some beer, let's see where we can go. And I wonder if we're going to kind of see a a sort of, you know, the pendulum swing the other way, where now you have so many flavors in beer, like we were saying before, we're going to see more and more trying to build off that instead of kind of the profile starting the other way. So I don't know, that's my unproven theory, but we'll see.
Very interesting. So ladies, are we going to try and experiment with some more beer cocktails as we head into winter?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think I'm going to. I think you've convinced me.
And maybe, you know, maybe we'll do a big communal thing. Like we're saying, we'll get some people over, you know, have a big stock pot of something and see what we can cook up.
Yeah.
Love it. And for all of you listening at home, if you've made an awesome beer cocktail, please send it like our way. Send us the recipe. And we'd love to know the creations that you've made at home, whether they're hot or cold. Just because we're going into winter doesn't mean we're only looking for the warm ones. But no, it sounds like there's a whole other world that we actually need to explore a little bit. Christina, you've already got a few feet in there, you know, and we'll have to take it from you. And for those listening at home, you can check out Christina's website. It'll be linked in the show notes, but it's brachiatrix.com. And there are loads of recipes on there and loads of experiments where Christina has made all sorts of historically accurate or inspired recipes, ales, experiments, and also just musings along the way. So have a look at that. Righto. So ladies, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you everybody for listening to another one of our Beer Ladies episodes, especially these beer adjacent ones where we like to dip our fingers into the worlds parallel to ours. And Lisa, Christina, thank you for bringing your knowledge as always. And to everybody at home, we'll see you on the socials. We'll see you on BuyMeABeer/coffee. And check out all of our different links are in our link tree, in our bios, at Beer Ladies Pod, wherever you get your podcasts, your tweets, your Facebook posts, your Instagram pics, we're everywhere. So have a look. We're even on TikTok. So go have a go have a gander there. We're trying to be like the young'uns. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good evening or day. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.